Welcome to the Rookies Podcast. I'm Daniel Racer, joined here by
Rio Taylor,
Colin Coffey.
It's good to have you guys today. We're going to be talking about our time in student ministry, our transition to senior pastors, and just our relationship with our student pastors, experience we learned from that, and how that kind of shapes us as senior pastors today.
I feel like before we go further, we need to put a disclaimer that we are going to make a lot of jokes at student pastors' expense. We love you, we're for you, but some things are just plain funny.
That's fair. I think on that, we sometimes I feel like we can make more jokes as student pastors than senior pastors.
Well, we made hardly any pop culture references, except for maybe Narnia and Lord of the Rings in our first few episodes, and we already made the joke that we can use a lot more pop culture for this one because it's a student pastor episode.
A lot more Marvel references.
A lot more Marvel references. You know, if you think Endgame was really the end game, let me tell you about what's going to happen.
That's right.
Okay, I got to tell you this. When I was a student pastor, I did a series where we were going to go through kind of the major doctrines of the Christian faith.
Yep.
I did do Endgame as the name for my Revelation eschatology series, and I stand by it.
On brand.
It fits. It fits. So let's start here. Rhea, let's go to you. How long were you in student ministry? What was that like for you? Was that your first job in ministry? What did student ministry look like for you? Where were you at?
Yeah, so my first position in ministry was I was the interim youth minister at First Baptist Church of Holdenville from January 2013 till about May 2013. So I knew the previous student pastor who was there. They brought me in just for a season to preach while I was on campus. It was a great time. Learned a lot there. I mainly learned that at 19 years old, I was not ready to be in vocational ministry, which is fine. And I think Holdenville had enough sense to realize that, hey, we like you, but you know, we kind of want someone a little more experienced, which 100% get. But I've done that. I've been an intern in student ministry groups or student youth, or I guess in student ministry. And my first non-interim was I was the youth minister at Trinity Baptist Maud in Maud, Oklahoma. If you can find that on a map, props. But so I was there for about a year. I was a junior at OBU. I was bivocational. And I had a lot of fun. Had a lot of good students there. Really enjoyed my time. Learned that leading kids to camp is a very special grace from God, both sanctifying and enjoyable. But I did that and then did a couple other interims in student ministry before in Kentucky during my time at Southern. About a year and a half, 2 years, I was the associate pastor of students and kids at Worthville Baptist Church under, and I'm not just saying this because hopefully he'll listen, but under one of my favorite pastors, Chris Kizzee. I mean, that to this day is still one of the most formative times I've had in ministry that I believe prepared me for the lead pastorate.
That's awesome. What about you, Colin? What's your experience in student ministry?
I interned while I was home for the summer with Falls Creek, which was around youth, and then we did something at Quell Springs Baptist Church and got to lead some things. And
didn't you cuss in a sermon at Quell Springs?
Shout out to Jeff DiGiacomo for not firing me. It was not that type of profanity.
What happened, Colin?
Oh, I want to hear the story. It's an embarrassing story. It was just one of those things that happens and you're like out of your body looking at yourself thinking, what went through my head to say that? And so I was preaching on, you know, not loving the world and fear of God versus fear of man. And I can't remember the text, but I use the illustration of the ancient inscription where some Christian legionary is being mocked for being a Christian, and it's a picture of a man on a cross with the head of a donkey. And like I was getting blank stares, and I was like, they're calling him a jackleg. And I didn't say jackleg.
Just quote the King James. I think it's okay.
Then I got some facial expressions. And I said, I'm not being crass. But they hate, and it is still an offense in many ways in our culture to believe in a God who was crucified. You know, the God-man and all that. And I had to talk a little bit about the incarnation, but the whole time I was thinking, move past it. Just keep going. and finished, and it went fine, as much as a horrible sermon can be fine. And then I went up to Jeff, I'm so sorry. I am so, so sorry. That was not intentional. It just came out. And he's like, it's fine. Like,
that's almost like as bad as the guy who was preaching about Lot and Sodom and Gomorrah, and he went to go pitch his tents.
Yep. Oh, that was bad.
But he didn't say that.
I love that one. It's so good.
Dude, his eyes get so big when he realizes what he just said. And he at the very end of the video goes, I hope this isn't recorded. It's like, dude, you're famous.
Yeah, I think that guy got fired because he didn't respond well to what happened afterwards. But yeah, thankfully I didn't. Jeff is a gracious and kind man and taught me a lot in ministry.
We love you, Jeff.
Also, when I like bought like 5 different varieties of popcorn instead of like 2 and spent like more money than I was supposed to. Thankfully, he had it in the budget. But yeah, that was a good experience. And then I got hired at Calvary Baptist Church to be the youth pastor and was the youth pastor for about 8 months before the pastor that I was working with and wanted to learn from got called to another church, and then they asked for my resume. And so I had a short but glorious 8 months.
8 months at Calvary and then stepping into senior pastor.
Yeah, then they called me to be the lead pastor. I said, I don't think you guys need to call me senior pastor given that I'm as young as I am and I'm not in the senior category yet. And they're like, we'll call you senior. How about that? I was like, that's great.
I love it. Feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
It was great. They're awesome.
I was really fortunate when I look back in my call to ministry. It happened at Falls Creek. And if you're from Oklahoma, you know Falls Creek.
It's the Baptist Mecca.
It is. I was just finished my freshman year of college, and the Lord called me to ministry, and I told him no and no and no, and eventually just broke down in tears telling God no, finally surrendered to him. I went and told my youth pastor, Joey Zodro, and he just said it's about time, and that was really reassuring to me. And so for the next year, I tried to figure out what that call to ministry looked like. But I talked with my student pastor, Joey, a lot, and I asked him going to that next year of Falls Creek, like, hey, can I work alongside you, understand the behind the scenes of Falls Creek and ministry? And he said, yeah. And so he kind of let me be his unofficial intern for a year. And I got to see how ministry worked from the youth pastor side of it. Whenever he was called away to a different position, he recommended that I be the interim. And I was a senior in college. I've been dating my now wife at the time for a couple years. And we were about to get married. And so it was a really great time to be introduced to lead youth ministry and to lead Falls Creek and to lead a mission trip. I felt really young. I mean, I was 20 years old. I'm just kind of looking back, like, what was that church thinking, letting me do this kind of stuff? But so thankful for them and for Rick Longcrier. He was my senior pastor whenever I was there and shepherded me really well. And then I moved to seminary. We talked about that in a previous episode. I didn't work on staff at a church anywhere. I just went to school. I was a church member at Highview Baptist Church. But then when I moved back to Oklahoma, I came back as associate pastor to Quapaw Baptist Church, and I was associate pastor bivocational, so we had a youth pastor who was part-time and a senior pastor who was part-time, and I was there just to help with the responsibilities. And then after about a year, our student pastor left. He moved away, and the youth ministry was growing. It was flourishing. It was going really well, and I knew that someone needed to devote time and energy to continue that momentum, and so I volunteered. I never really had a desire to get back into youth ministry, but I love those students, and I love what was happening, so I got back into youth ministry for a couple years. And it was good, and it was enjoyable. We did more camp stuff, all the activities and events, and then after that, I went to Grove First Baptist Church, where I served as family pastor and did youth ministry again. I was there for 3 years, and I think my time in youth ministry was very enjoyable, but I think if I look back at how I would maybe do things differently, I probably treated youth ministry more like adult ministry. I wanted to challenge our students to grow. And I mean, especially if you're a believer, the Bible doesn't give you tiers of believers. You're not a student believer and then an adult believer. And so I maybe treated my students like adults in a lot of ways that maybe weren't fun for them and weren't exciting. I tried to do all the fun stuff, the wild and crazy games and stuff. But I really wanted to challenge them and push them to grow in their faith. And that was, it was fun. I think it was good for me. It was good for them. I have a few students that just stick out in my mind that I'm still really good friends with today. Whenever they're home from college, they come over to our house and they hang out with my kids and they visit with me and my wife and some lifelong friends that came from my time in student ministry. And so I can remember it very fondly, and I'm sure you guys do as well. I want to kind of ask each of you, if you had to kind of nail down your favorite part of student ministry, what would you say it would be? And either one of you guys can go first.
I like so much the eagerness students have to learn. They're very teachable. And I think if you get a great student pastor, that's a really good thing, because you can give them really good resources to get them started right in the Christian life. And I think that's something that was exciting for me, is I knew where I had made missteps and misunderstanding the gospel, or misunderstanding how faith and works go together. And I was able to give people resources like Living the Cross-Centered Life by Mahaney and get them started on the right foot, or talk to them about, you know, the gospel and how it frees you from shame and motivates you towards repentance, and how that plays in with the security of the believer. There's so much that was good about that. And early on in my call to ministry, I wanted to minister to middle school students, because that's when I really felt the call and knew that it was such a formative time. They're really able to read and do a lot more than people give them credit for. So I commend you for doing what you did, because they are very much the church of today, not the church of tomorrow.
Yeah.
And treating them like the church of the tomorrow makes them not be the church of tomorrow in some ways, I think.
That's a good point.
And discipleship needs to be put into action now. Like they gotta learn, they gotta do things. So I think that's what a good youth minister will do. And I tried to do some of the same things. We preached through books of the Bible. We hit some topical stuff just because they've got stuff going on, and tried to put the cookies on the bottom shelf, not to be, you know, demeaning or anything, but some of them have some things that they're thinking about and wanted to grab their attention with like a question series on, hey, it's okay to ask questions about the faith or of God or of life. And yeah, I loved that. I found it easier to get students to read their Bibles and lean into discipleship than adults. And I still think that's the case. They have like a 4-day school week in Inola. So like Mondays they had off, and I would just intentionally devote that to discipleship and be with students and invite them to go do stuff. And then along the way, work in discipleship things. And it was a lot of fun. And I still have relationships with several of those students that are about to graduate or just graduated, and really thankful for that time. And they were gracious to let me work through learning how to preach and preaching to, you know, a seventh grader who has just spent 8 hours at school and now gets to listen to me, a brand new preacher, talk about, you know, Mark. So I really enjoyed it. And seeing them grow and walk out their own faith with their peers is just really encouraging.
For me, it's similar to Colin in that students are often far more open and honest than adults tend to be. And I don't mean that in a bash towards adults. By the time you're in your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, you've kind of formulated your worldview of the world, right or wrong. You've established your own traditions. You've established your own, I think this is what we need to do. And a lot of the times in churches, our issues don't come from the students. They come from adults. And students are just like, hey, I don't understand this. They're more open about what they don't get. Especially this new generation is more open to, hey, we're navigating this culture that honestly makes no sense to us. Like, what is gender? What is sexuality? What is all this? And we have a prime opportunity with how they long for honesty. They want to see that this makes sense. Student ministry was fun in that regard, in that, you know, you had to be very strategic on how you said things, and because there's also a generation that wants to make sure people feel loved and don't feel judged or ostracized. But I think my favorite part was just how, and I say moldable, they were. Mm-hmm. I know I'm going to get in trouble with some crowds because they say if you're under 18, then you're just being indoctrinated. But the truth of the matter is you're getting indoctrinated where you're at, so we might as well do it for Jesus and not let the world do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my favorite part. Also, as a joke, because we say student ministry is all about, you know, the fun stuff. One of my favorite things I ever did in student ministry was we did a Fortnite game night. It's where we took a Wednesday night during the summer. In Kentucky, they sometimes break at some churches for the summer. They don't continue to do a bunch of stuff like we do in Oklahoma. But I took a bunch of Nerf guns, went to Walmart, spent probably $250, $300 on Nerf guns and bullets, which was the most student pastor thing I've ever done. Got some, you know, Nerf swords, all that stuff. And what we did was we did at Fortnite. People could show up with their own guns and their own, well, their own Nerf guns. Could show up with their own Nerf guns.
We're in Kentucky.
And their own Nerf bullets. But they had to turn them in. They couldn't bring them in with them. And we scattered them throughout the church and put bullets everywhere. It was like Fortnite. You had to go find it. You had to go get it. We put some boxes everywhere where they could build forts and everything. It was great. It was one of the most fun things. And to this day, I still hear from some of those students about how fun that night was. And granted, that's just that was the fun part of student ministry. You get to do dumb stuff like that. That's why student ministry is also just really fun. But kind of setting up something I want to talk about is one of the best parts of student ministry is the buck doesn't stop with you. Meaning, if you mess up, you've got a safety net called the lead pastor, hopefully. And there's less pressure with that. Yeah. And for, in my case, Chris Kazee was the best safety net I could have had in those year and a half, 2 years. But yeah. What do y'all think? Do y'all enjoy having that safety net?
You were, I mean, it was great. Chad had been in youth ministry for like 14 years. And so he had a lot of wisdom. And I loved asking him questions.
I think about my when I was at Quapaw and the pastor I worked with there, he was his name is Matt Robertson. He's a bivocational guy, and he's the principal of a high school, like a small town high school. And so he interacts with the students that I was teaching on Wednesday nights every day. And even at church, he was Coach Rob. He wasn't pastor. He wasn't brother. He was Coach Rob. And so I definitely had a real blessing in that safety net of being able to do ministry at church with these students while he did ministry at school with those students. And I love the relationship I had with Matt and just the blessing it was to be there with him.
And
I think...
Sorry, go ahead.
I would say just when I think about my favorite part of student ministry... It just came up just a couple of weeks ago. Whenever I got done teaching on Wednesday nights with adults, I walked over to our student area where our students were, and I saw our youth pastor, his wife, sitting with a couple students, some high school girls. And they were just talking, and I walked up and just – I wasn't trying to disturb anything. I was just kind of watching and listening. And they kind of said, oh, perfect. Daniel's here. Let's ask him. And so one of the girls asked me, like, a question about angels and about, like, angels. Are the fallen angels? Can they be redeemed? Can they be saved? And I just we sat and talked for like 5-10 minutes about these questions. And one of my favorite things about student ministry is how inquisitive students are and how they're not ashamed to ask dumb questions. Mm-hmm. Just the memories that came flooding back through that conversation were so special because I used to do something on Sunday nights called AMA, which is just ask me anything. And we'd sit around and they would ask theology questions. They would ask Bible questions. And with adults, you can't really do that because adults feel like they need to have all the answers and they're too afraid to ask sometimes. So I love that. And I mean, I talk about three of the students I had whenever I was at Grove, three girls that graduated. They got to the point where they would keep a section on their phone on notes and they would just keep questions throughout the week, throughout the year. And whenever we'd get together, they'd ask them. And even to this day, when they come home for break, they come over to our house, they pull out their phones, they open the note section, and we spend about an hour just asking questions. And it's so much fun.
So you said something in your explanation that made me laugh, and I really want to ask this question now. Because you mentioned students aren't afraid to ask dumb questions. I got to share one of the dumbest questions I've ever been asked. But I love this student, and he took it really well when he realized how dumb the question was. But I also say student ministry is also where you sometimes get asked the worst questions, and you don't know what to do.
That's true.
So I want to share a story with that, and I want to ask you, what's the worst question you ever had a student ask you publicly? Because that's the key thing. Because for me, it was... this could get out of hand real quick, but for me, the dumb one was I did a Q&A night at Worthville, and this kid, sweet kid, he'd been growing in his faith. Shout out Alex, if he ever listens to this, but he says, and dead seriousness goes, I'm very curious. I need to know this. What happened to the fishes during the flood?
You're kidding me. That's brilliant.
What happened to the fishes during the flood? And I kind of looked at him and went, I thought he was kidding, so I laughed, but like deadpan serious, concerned. How did Noah build an aquarium on the ark? Like, where did he get the water? And it's kind of like, dude, the whole earth was water, man.
Take a step back.
When he realized that, he went, oh, yeah, my bad. But then when I was at Holdenville, we did a. Also, I'm sorry, I'm going to share a stupid thing I did at Holdenville too. But I had a student who had waited till the very end of the service, and I made the mistake of saying, are there any questions? And he raised his hand, and he said, yeah, I have a very serious question I've been thinking through. And I said, okay, what is it? He says, he says, "Do angels do it?" In front of 30 students, and I went,
There is an answer in scripture.
There is, but I was a freshman in college and was like, Jesus is the light of the world. I did not handle that well. And then
just read something glorious from scripture.
I think the next week I did something else stupid where I was talking about how Christ was crucified, and I made a comment about how he was crucified in his wrist, not in his hands, because, you know, scientifically his hands would have ripped off. And someone said, well, in the Bible show that was really popular during that time that wasn't The Chosen, they said he got crucified in his hands. And I should have said, that show is inaccurate. What I said was, the Bible is wrong.
Oh, no.
It's student ministry in that show.
Yeah. Oh, no.
What about you, Colin? What dumb question do you get?
We had one. I was asking a hypothetical question, or not a hypothetical question. I was asking a rhetorical question while I was preaching through part of Mark's gospel where he addresses divorce and making the point that divorce does not happen because of a good situation. And someone in the audience said, my mom got divorced. It was a really good thing. And it truly was. I know the situation. Abusive husband. They got out of it. It was good. It was a good situation now. But he just like either didn't hear or comprehend what I was saying. I was like, but was it a good situation that caused the divorce? No. That's what I'm saying. But it was like, he was like, no, this was a good thing. I was
this
like,
this is good.
Okay, you're not following me. And it was awkward because he like injected his experience into it. And that was hard. This wasn't youth ministry, but at one point in our ethics class at OBU, we were talking about IVF and some of the possibilities and ethical potential problems and things like that. And one of the girls in class was like, my parents conceived, like I was conceived by IVF. Like, am I... like
having this
do
crisis.
I have the image of God? Like, and yeah. and the professor handled it so well and really pastorally walked her through it and was helpful. But I was just like, oh my gosh, I never want to talk about IVF ever again.
Was that McWilliams?
No, that was Arbo.
Oh, dude, he's so great. Good. So good. I bet he handled that like a boss.
Oh, he did. And yeah. she was comforted. She had misunderstood something he said. And but yeah, youth ministry is hard. And sometimes you too just have to like call them on the carpet and say, dude, you're being... Mm-hmm. And I say dude because it's almost always the guys.
The middle school boys.
Have you ever seen that video where the guy's like preaching and he goes, because I had this student, he just wouldn't quit messing around. And so I punched him as hard as I could in the chest and said, when are you going to start living for God? And I led that boy to the Lord right there.
Yes. I think about... I might win this dumb question contest, for being honest. It's maybe a PG-13 or further... But I went to the schools to go have lunch one day just because that's what I wanted to start doing when I was allowed to. So I go into the schools, and some of those three high school girls I was talking about a minute ago, they had a friend who they tried inviting to church, and he'd been a couple times and this kind of thing. So we're sitting in the middle of the school cafeteria, and they're like, yeah, this is our pastor, Daniel. We love asking questions. Do you have any questions for him? And he sits there, and he kind of pauses, and we're eating lunch in the middle of the school cafeteria. And he looks up, and he says, can Christians use sex toys?
Oh, no.
In school. This is like 12:30. We're surrounded by hundreds of students.
And there's
and I
this
look
has
at
been
him,
the rookie podcast. There's another... It's been good talking to you all.
Listen, I just look at them, and I look at him, and in that moment, and I mean, you guys get this. Yeah. I can either avoid the question entirely and have him not whenever ask a pastor question again, or I can deal with the question and all of its awkwardness, and so I was like, all right, let's talk about this. And so tried to navigate that discussion. It was the worst thing ever. It was terrible.
What was your answer?
I honestly don't remember. I think I talked about the importance of marriage, like between a husband and a wife, and how it's biblical, and that's what the Bible commands and teaches. I don't know. I kind of tried to black it out. But what's funny, I say this. Students ask all kinds of questions.
Yeah.
Never been asked that question by an adult.
But here's the thing. They do it because they genuinely want to know.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, it's awkward for us.
Yeah.
But it's not for them because these are true concerns they have. Which is why student ministry is also a great, great thing.
Yeah.
Because, man, I mean, you can get ahead of that. Because here's the deal. The world was going to answer that question for him.
Exactly.
And you answered it instead. So we're laughing here, but... that's the reality of the world we live in, is we have to answer those questions from a biblical worldview. Otherwise, they're going to get the world's worldview, and it's always wrong.
Yeah. Here's a provocative question.
There are not the, any of those after what we just heard.
There are those.
Watch yourself.
There are those that would say we need to get rid of youth ministry. We need to just treat them all like adults and put them all in church, and their parents need to be the ones discipling them. And I know what my answer to that is, but like, what would you guys respond to that with?
I think the underlying heart behind that is right in terms of mm-hmm. parents should be the primary disciple makers. And in a lot of ways,
yeah,
we all three would agree with this. Student ministry has become a drop off your students. We'll handle the spiritual development. You just go home or you go to Bible study or something like that. So there's a level in which I think a better question to ask, sorry, I'm not trying to change your question. Do we need a hard reset of what student ministry is? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I don't think we're qualified to answer that in this podcast because we're called the rookies and none of us are in student ministry anymore. But I think the heart behind that is good. I don't agree with it only because I think age-based intentional discipleship is necessary as long as youth ministry doesn't become its own congregation.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I want to say this. I am blessed to have a fantastic youth pastor. Mm. His name's CJ Downham. He's been here for just over a year. Whenever I got here, we didn't have a youth pastor, and I went out and poached him from another church, like full disclosure. I was originally looking just for a friend in ministry, but then once I got to meet him and talk with him, I thought, this is the guy. Like, this is who I want doing ministry at Faith Baptist Church alongside me. And CJ does such a great job of balancing rich theological Bible studies and wild and crazy games. We had a Call of Duty Zombies lock-in at our church a week ago. He used the whole church. We only put one hole in the wall in the sanctuary, which has now been patched up. But in my mind, it's worth it. I mean, we had nearly 50 kids in our church building that night, and that's something this church hadn't had in a long time.
It was like only 10 of them were from different churches. Like 40 of that was students from your church.
Yeah, which was amazing. Our youth ministry is growing because he's doing such a great job, and I think it's really important. I just want to think about youth ministry, the importance of having youth pastors that are theologically sound and that are called to student ministry. I think mm-hmm. that's something that's important that we probably don't touch a lot on, but I believe that men are called to student ministry. That might be for a time or for a whole career in ministry. But I want to touch on this. And this might be the last thing that we get to. But how do you, as a senior pastor, disciple and train your youth pastor? Because statistically, most guys don't stay in student ministry. They're maybe eventually going to be a senior pastor or something like that. So in your experiences as a senior pastor, maybe not right now, but previously, how do you try to train a student pastor, help him along?
So one thing I want to say first is one of the things I think works against student pastors is that they're often not treated like pastors.
Yeah.
They're treated like the youth guy or the student guy, or as though they don't have an authority. And when I was at Gilead Baptist in Glendale, Kentucky, one of the things I really wanted to do is my first pastorate, they already had a student pastor named Connor. I wanted to go in and tell Connor from the get-go, hey, I understand a senior pastor, like the buck stops with me. I understand that, and I'm your safety net. But I'm going to treat you like an equal.
Yeah.
Meaning, I'm going to ask your opinion. And if I don't go with it, like, that's not because I don't respect you. It's because, like, I'm the one that has to make the decision. And from the get-go, just treating him like an equal, trusting him to do his job, being there just to talk. And honestly, that was, to this day, my favorite ministry relationship is what I had with him.
Yeah.
We were a team. We were a cohesive unit. So much so that, before I go to that, really showed the church that he was a pastor and that he wasn't just the youth guy. Yeah. Tried to make sure that, and this, I'm not tooting my own horn, wanted to make sure that he was taken care of financially and that he could stay there long term, yeah. Which is one thing that, if I can just share my pet peeve, we underpay our student pastors severely, mm-hmm. and churches will pay a guy a very minimal salary, call him full time, and then expect him to bring mega church results.
Uh-huh.
And that's part of the reason why it's hard to find a good student pastor.
Mm-hmm.
But try to make sure Connor and his family were taken care of. And again, Connor returned the favor. He tried to make sure that, you know, he defended me. He was always the biggest advocate in my corner. It was a very mutual relationship. That decision to treat him like an equal, especially during COVID,
yeah,
he was the automatic thought on everyone's mind when I left that church to be the next lead pastor. And not because they were going to promote him in that sense. They didn't view it like that. But he was a natural fit into that role because he knew the church. They didn't want to lose momentum. And they wanted to keep somebody who would keep going in the direction we were going with discipleship. And so he was a natural fit. It wasn't a promotion from student ministry to senior pastor. It was just the church respected him to that level to where to them it was an easy shift just to go to this. And so I think the biggest thing I would say to train our student pastors, I think, and I'm not correcting you when I say this, because there is some level in which we do have younger guys we need to help bring up. But I think the biggest thing is learning to treat them like an equal.
Yeah.
Understand that, you know, you're their safety net, they're not yours, and that the buck does stop with you on decision making. But they need to feel like their voice matters and that they can go to you, they can help make hard decisions. And that's what I would say is probably the best thing for student pastors, is treat them like they're actually pastors.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think paying them well enough that they can actually do the job is important. Also, being that guy that will be in their corner and defend them unless they're in sin is really helpful. We've got a great youth pastor. Shout out to Adam Henderson. And he's doing a fantastic job. And one thing I love is that he's just very relational, intentional, spends a lot of time with the kids and invites them over to his house and hosts things where he can get them into a context where they're trusting him, learning, you know, have a freedom to ask questions and using that as an opportunity to encourage them, exhort them towards faithfulness, to put their faith to work with their peers. And, you know, we try to get together for a variety of things. We really view it as the pastors pastor together, that we don't have, you know, in our org chart, we have somebody that has the lead, but we all, you know, I can get vetoed essentially. And so I come to them with stuff. Wes is our worship pastor, and we try to intentionally term that as a pastoral duty. In some ways, he's got one of the most significant jobs of the church because he literally puts words into people's mouths to sing that they will remember far more.
That's good.
You know, closely and memorably than anything that I say. Like, they will not be repeating my sermons, but the songs that he chooses and the way that he leads music is, you know, frankly, probably the highlight of a lot of people's week. So I'm really thankful for those two guys and the partnership that we have. And so we talk about preaching together, and what I try to do to invest in them and to encourage them is to give them what I can that they didn't have the opportunity to get in terms of like full-time preparation for preaching, some of those finer details, and just work through sermon review together, talking about sermons, direction of the church, things like that. And man, I really love it. I wish we could do more of it. I wish they could both be full time and we could do that more regularly. That would be a joy. But since Wes lives like 45 minutes away and Adam's pretty close, it's hard for all of us to get together unless it's like a Sunday morning.
And not to chime in again, because I know Daniel, you're really good at training younger men. Like, just one of your gifts is that. Lord's been really good to you in that and providing you with those younger men. So I really want to hear from you and what you're doing with CJ or with other young men on your team. But one thing I want to say that I feel like is important is your relationship with your student pastor. Colin's absolutely right. You got to be their biggest advocate. You got to be their biggest supporter. But you also do, and this kind of stinks sometimes, is you do have to be a boss. You have to give expectations. You have to give guidelines. And if you have a good relationship, that goes off well. But sometimes it's hard. And, you know, kind of what Colin's talking is, there's also this, you know, when you have a fuller staff, even they're bivocational, you know, you're going to want to spend more time with them. I know I'm going to Grayson in a few weeks, and the student pastor there is the, I think, vice principal of the high school, and he's one of the football coaches. So that dude's bivocational, but he does a great job. And so I'm looking forward to kind of seeing what that relationship looks like. My goal is to be like me and Connor, buddy-buddy, but, you know, I'll probably be texting Colin a bit on, hey, how does this work when he's bivocational? How do I be very intentional? And that's just Yeah. One thing I wanted to say. So, Colin, that was a good word. But, Daniel, I want to hear from you.
Man, just as you said, Rio, I've really been blessed by the Lord of him bringing people to my, bringing young men to my church who are called to ministry. I feel like I'm not doing anything special to draw them in. The Lord's just placing them here. And so I'm trying to take full advantage of my interactions with them. And at the same time, I also recognize that I can't meet with all of them as much as I'd like to. And so I'm trying to find a couple here and there that I can pour into, and then in turn, they pour into others. But CJ, as my youth pastor, even whenever he came, it was over a year ago, I was very intentional with the committee that I don't want a youth babysitter. Mm-hmm. I don't want somebody who's just going to entertain the students. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want a pastor first and a student pastor second. Like, I want him to shepherd the flock alongside me. Like, his specific ministry is youth ministry, and CJ talked a lot about that. But one of the ways I want to help the church see him as Pastor CJ is I try to call him Pastor CJ as often as I can. Mm-hmm. But then also, I had him preach a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, I guess now. And that was the Sunday where our Lord's Supper fell. And so I told him, like, hey, I want you to lead Lord's Supper. Like, I want you to be the one who's directing it, explaining it. I said, I'll be right there next to you. Helping you, but I want you to lead it. And so he was sure, I'd love to. And he did a great job. He did fantastic. I think it was the first time he'd ever done that. Might have been nervous about it. You couldn't tell. I think the church loved it. And so small things like that where I want to give him the opportunity like to feel like a pastor and to the whole church and not just students. But I also want the church to see him as someone in whom they can go to. And he does a great job with, like, our adult volunteers pouring into them and discipling them and building relationships with them where that he truly is another pastor here at Faith Baptist Church. And that's plurality of elders. I mean, it's a biblical model that we're trying to follow. And so I think just as we've had this time to reflect on student ministry, I think all of us in this room, the three of us, have really strong connection to youth ministry. There was a lot of joys in that. There were some hardships in that, just like any other ministry. So, really got anything to close out?
Yeah, well, before Colin wraps us up, if you're listening, if you're a pastor, student pastor, or maybe you're a lay member, deacon, it doesn't matter. The biggest thing you can do to support your student pastor is pray for them. I think at times, we've talked about a little bit here, but I think at times at the church, like Daniel said, we treat them like glorified babysitters. And they are molding the next generation that is asking harder questions than most generations before them have ever asked.
Yeah.
So I think our best bet is if we want to see student pastors continue and thrive, we have to also be patient. One of the things that frustrates me most, and this is also because of a church culture that is hopefully slowly going away, is numbers-driven ministry. Because student ministry now can't be numbers-driven. It has to be relationally driven.
Yeah.
And that takes so much time. So... If you're listening, if you have a student pastor, like, hey, they're not getting 40, 50 students. They're getting 5 or 6. Man, praise God for that 5 or 6.
Yep.
If they're doing a good job to disciple them, just keep going. That will pay off. I'll end with a good story on Connor before Colin wraps us up. Connor, when he went to Gilead, inherited a big group. It shrunk a little bit. He wasn't as, in his own words, outgoing as the previous guy. But I got to see for 3 years that student ministry multiply because he intentionally invested in students. There were, I think, 3 young men called the ministry under his student ministry. There were students who owned their faith. Here's one for you. Connor would have students who in the student ministry would date, and when they broke up, they kept coming to youth group.
Praise
you
God.
You guys know how big of a deal that is.
That doesn't happen when you're an adult.
That's true.
Oh. That got hard. That was hard. That was hurtful.
So... And one last thing before we end, I think too, as pastors, we have to be intentional about pastoring our youth and investing in them, but also pastoring families and coming alongside the youth pastor to pastor families. And that's one thing we've done to try and reorient is say, hey, parents, we want to come alongside you. Here's some things we're doing to help you, resourcing them, things like that. And that has been fun too, to work with Adam on to come together and do some of that stuff. Well, hey, thank you guys for listening. If you want 0% off on seminary, enter the code ROOKIES when you apply at any of our 6 SBC seminaries, and they won't know what
if
that code's
for. If
they
even accept the code.
Tell them they need to sponsor us or something like that. You know, shameless plug.
We will literally let any seminary sponsor us that's Southern Baptist. Just heads up.
Yes. True. Yeah. Rio said anybody. We have standards. But
we really don't. Just believe the Bible.
Daniel and I have standards. But thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you next time about our failures. So tune in for that.
Good times
gem of a lesson. Yeah.